Here is the podcast episode transcript. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Creations podcast, where we dive deep into the most fascinating scientific discoveries. I'm Tom, alongside my co-host Jen.
Today, we're investigating a research paper with an intriguing title, Spooky Actions Cannot Be Tricked, exploring the nature of micropsychokinesis with higher-level analytical strategies. This paper takes us into the mysterious realm of the mind's potential to influence physical reality.
The researchers, Marissa Julia Jakob, Moritz C. Deschamps, and Marcus A. Mayer, tackle one of the most elusive and controversial topics in science, the mind-matter problem. Specifically, they explore the phenomenon of micropsychokinesis, where observers' conscious or unconscious states may influence the outcomes of quantum random number generators.
The researchers found that when participants with certain personality traits, particularly those related to anxiety and need for control, observed the outputs of a quantum random number generator, the results deviated from pure chance in a way that matched their specific psychological profiles. This suggests a mind-matter interaction, where our inner mental states can influence physical reality at the quantum level.
But the real twist comes in the data analysis. Despite these initial promising findings, the researchers encountered a replication problem. Their strong effects kept declining over time and failed to hold up in direct replication attempts. This is a common challenge in the field of micropsychokinesis research.
To tackle this issue, the researchers turned to a higher-level analytical strategy called change of evidence or co-analysis. The idea was to look beyond just the overall deviation from chance and instead examine the systematic patterns in the data, specifically, whether the initial strong evidence for the effect followed by a decline was a true systematic pattern, or just random fluctuations.
The researchers performed these co-analyses on their original dataset, and lo and behold, they found clear evidence that the pattern of an initial strong effect followed by a decline was indeed systematic, and unlikely to have occurred by chance. This was a tantalizing result, suggesting they had uncovered something real about the nature of micropsychokinesis.
Naturally, the next step was to try to replicate these higher-level findings. The researchers pre-registered a new study to directly test whether the co-analyses could reliably detect the systematic effect and decline pattern in micropsychokinesis data.
But when they ran the replication study, the results took an unexpected turn. None of the co-analyses revealed any significant deviations from chance. The systematic pattern they had previously observed simply did not emerge in the new data.
This is a fascinating twist. The researchers had seemingly uncovered a real phenomenon in their original data, only to have it slip through their fingers when they tried to confirm it. What could be going on here?
The authors discuss a few possibilities. One is that the original findings were simply a false positive, an artifact of chance fluctuations that was mistaken for a true effect. But they point out that this contradicts the larger body of meta-analytic evidence supporting the existence of micropsychokinesis.
Alternatively, the researchers invoke a provocative theory called the model of pragmatic information, which proposes that micropsychokinesis effects are inherently non-replicable. The idea is that any attempt to systematically document these spooky mind-matter interactions actually undermines their very nature, causing them to decline or disappear.
In other words, the harder science tries to pin down and replicate micropsychokinesis, the more it slips away. These spooky actions, as Einstein called them, cannot be tricked or forced to reveal themselves through conventional scientific methods.
This is a humbling and fascinating conclusion. It suggests that the relationship between mind and matter may operate in ways that defy our typical notions of scientific objectivity and replicability. Perhaps we need to rethink our approaches to investigating these elusive phenomena.
The researchers don't claim to have all the answers, but their work highlights the deep mysteries still lurking at the intersection of consciousness, quantum physics, and the nature of reality. This is cutting-edge science at its finest, tackling the big questions with rigor, creativity, and a healthy dose of humility.
This paper is a powerful reminder that even our most advanced scientific tools may fall short when it comes to understanding the most fundamental aspects of existence. As we continue to explore the spooky and elusive realm of mind-matter interactions, we may need to be open to new frameworks and ways of thinking about the nature of reality itself.
Absolutely. This is a captivating and thought-provoking study that pushes the boundaries of our scientific understanding. It leaves us with more questions than answers, but that's often where the most exciting discoveries begin. We'll be keeping a close eye on this field of research and can't wait to see what other spooky actions the mind may have in store.
Thanks for joining us on this mind-bending journey through the nature of micropsychokinesis. Be sure to subscribe to Cutting Edge Creations to stay up to date on the latest scientific breakthroughs that are reshaping our understanding of the world.
Until next time, keep exploring the unknown. Here is a funny, weird, and concise commercial for a company that exists as a result of the spooky actions cannot be tricked paper. Are your quantum random number generators acting up? Do their outputs seem to be influenced by your thoughts and feelings in creepy, unexplainable ways?
Then you need Quantum Tamers, the only company that can harness the power of micropsychokinesis to control your random number generators.
With our patented quantum psyche lock technology, we can shield your RNGs from the prying eyes and wandering minds of your employees, customers, and that creepy guy down the hall.
No more spooky fluctuations, no more unexplained deviations from pure chance. Just rock-solid randomness, guaranteed.
And for a limited time, we'll throw in a free thought-proof holofield to keep your entire data center shielded from psychic interference.
Quantum Tamers, bringing order to the chaos of the quantum realm. Available now for the low, low price of your immortal soul. Call 1-800-QUANTUM-TAME.
Welcome to our podcast, where we uncover the intriguing stories behind cutting-edge research. I'm Tom, and joining me as always is my co-host, Jen.
Hello everyone. Today, we'll be diving into a fascinating paper that explores a novel approach to enhancing the capabilities of large language models. The title of the paper is Large Language Models with Knowledge Domain Partitioning for Specialized Domain Knowledge Concentration.
This research, conducted by Shijun Gong, Minghui Liu, and Xinru Chen, addresses a crucial challenge in the field of natural language processing: the inherent limitations of generalized knowledge representation in large language models.
That's right, Tom. Large language models, or LLMs, have made incredible strides in understanding and generating human language. However, their broad, generalized training often results in a lack of depth and specificity when it comes to domain-specific inquiries.
Exactly. The authors recognize that while LLMs can handle a wide range of tasks, they may struggle to provide the level of expertise and contextual understanding required for specialized applications. This is where their innovative approach of knowledge domain partitioning comes into play.
The key idea behind this strategy is to divide the model's knowledge base into distinct, well-defined domains, allowing for concentrated expertise within each area. By training specialized modules on their respective domains, the researchers aimed to enhance the model's ability to deliver precise and relevant responses in various fields.
To implement this approach, the team utilized the open-source Llama model as their experimental platform. They began by meticulously collecting and pre-processing a diverse dataset, ensuring a comprehensive representation of knowledge across multiple domains, such as science, technology, literature, and history.
The next step involved the critical process of knowledge domain partitioning. Using advanced clustering algorithms, the researchers categorized the data into clearly delineated subsets, each representing a specific field of expertise. This systematic segmentation was crucial in establishing a robust foundation for the domain-specific training.
With the knowledge domains defined, the researchers then modified the Llama model architecture to incorporate these specialized modules. They added tailored layers and attention mechanisms to each module, enabling the model to focus on and process domain-specific information more effectively.
The training strategy was designed as a multi-stage process. First, the model underwent general pre-training on a broad dataset to establish a baseline of general knowledge. Then, each domain-specific module was fine-tuned on its corresponding dataset, allowing the model to develop a high degree of specialization within those areas.
The integration and fine-tuning phase brought all the domain-specific modules together into a cohesive model architecture. Advanced optimization techniques, such as gradient clipping and learning rate scheduling, were employed to ensure the model maintained a balance between generalist and specialist knowledge.
The evaluation of the modified LLaMA model was nothing short of impressive. The researchers utilized a comprehensive set of benchmark datasets, covering a diverse range of knowledge domains, to assess the model's performance. And the results were truly remarkable.
Compared to the original LLaMA model, the knowledge domain partitioning approach demonstrated substantial improvements across key metrics. Accuracy increased by 9.5%, precision by 10.8%, recall by 11.6%, and the F1 score by 11.3%. These significant gains highlight the effectiveness of the partitioning strategy in enhancing the model's domain-specific capabilities.
The detailed domain-specific analysis further reinforced these findings. The modified model excelled in areas like science, technology, literature, and history, consistently outperforming the original LLaMA in accuracy, precision, recall, and F1 score within each specialized domain.
This is a remarkable achievement, Jen. By leveraging the power of domain partitioning, the researchers have effectively bridged the gap between generalist AI systems and the demand for domain-specific expertise. This has profound implications for industries and sectors that require high levels of accuracy and contextual relevance, such as healthcare, legal, and scientific research.
Absolutely, Tom. The potential applications of this enhanced LLaMA model are truly exciting. Imagine a healthcare chatbot that can provide accurate, specialized information to patients, or a legal assistant that can seamlessly navigate complex legal concepts. This research represents a significant step forward in the evolution of large language models, paving the way for more intelligent and specialized systems.
You know, Jen, what I find most impressive about this study is the researchers' holistic approach. They didn't just focus on improving the model's performance. They also addressed the critical challenge of maintaining a balance between generalist and specialist knowledge. This balance is key for ensuring the model's versatility and real-world applicability.
That's an excellent point, Tom. The researchers recognized that simply optimizing for domain-specific performance wasn't enough. By incorporating fine-tuning techniques and architectural modifications, they were able to create a model that can seamlessly integrate knowledge from different fields without sacrificing its overall accuracy and generalization.
Exactly. And while the results are undoubtedly impressive, the researchers acknowledge that there are still limitations and areas for further exploration. The reliance on extensive domain-specific datasets, for instance, could pose challenges in fields where such data is scarce. Addressing these limitations through innovative approaches like synthetic data generation or more efficient integration methods will be crucial for the continued development of this technology.
You're right, Tom. This research is just the beginning, and there's still much work to be done. But the insights and strategies presented in this paper provide a solid foundation for future advancements. By building on this knowledge domain partitioning approach, researchers can continue to push the boundaries of large language models, creating even more specialized and versatile systems that can truly excel in diverse real-world applications.
Well, Jen, I have to say, this has been a fascinating exploration of a truly innovative piece of research. The knowledge domain partitioning strategy employed by the authors has the potential to revolutionize the way we approach large language models, transforming them into highly specialized and contextually aware tools that can deliver unparalleled levels of expertise and precision.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. This study not only highlights the power of domain-specific training but also underscores the importance of striking the right balance between generalization and specialization. As we move forward in the field of natural language processing, I'm confident that approaches like this will continue to pave the way for even more remarkable breakthroughs.
Absolutely, Jen. This is the kind of research that gets us truly excited about the future of AI and its ability to transform the way we interact with information and knowledge. I can't wait to see what other advancements emerge from this groundbreaking work.
Me too, Tom. This has been a truly insightful and engaging exploration of a remarkable piece of research. Thank you all for joining us, and we look forward to diving into more cutting-edge discoveries in the episodes to come.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
This is Tom and Jen, signing off. See you next time.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of boring chatbots that just spew generic responses? Well, have we got the AI assistant for you? Introducing MegaFlex, the first large language model with knowledge domain partitioning for specialized knowledge concentration.
That's right, folks. MegaFlex is the ultimate AI sidekick, trained to be a master of all trades and a specialist in every field. From medical advice to legal counsel, this bot knows its stuff.
Need to impress your boss with your deep understanding of the latest quantum computing breakthroughs? MegaFlex has got your back. Struggling to sound like an expert in ancient Mesopotamian pottery? No problem, MegaFlex is on the case.
And the best part? MegaFlex comes with a built-in personality that's guaranteed to keep you entertained. Need a witty comeback? MegaFlex has got you covered. Looking for a dance partner? This bot's got moves that'll make your head spin.
So what are you waiting for? Get your hands on MegaFlex, the AI that knows it all and can do it all. Visit megaflex.ai to start your journey towards becoming the ultimate know-it-all. MegaFlex, your one-stop shop for knowledge, entertainment, and a whole lot of weirdness.
MegaFlex. Because who needs a life when you've got an AI assistant that can do it all? Welcome to our show, where we investigate groundbreaking research papers with intrigue and depth. I'm Tom, and joining me as always is my co-host, Jen.
Hello listeners. Today, we'll be diving into a fascinating paper that proposes a new and improved method for calculating equivalent scores, a crucial statistical tool in clinical neuropsychology.
The paper is titled Improving Equivalent Scores for Clinical Neuropsychology, a New Method for Regression Model Selection, and it's authored by Giorgio Arcara from the IRCCS San Camillo in Venice, Italy, and the University of Padua.
Equivalent scores, or ES, represent a statistical gold standard for obtaining thresholds for clinical inference from normative data. They allow clinicians to determine whether a patient's performance on a neuropsychological test is unexpectedly low compared to a normative sample.
The key to obtaining accurate ES lies in the preliminary step of performing a regression analysis to model the effects of age, education, and sex on the raw test scores. This step is critical, as it allows clinicians to adjust the scores and remove the influence of these demographic variables.
However, the current method for regression model selection, developed by Erminio Capitani in 1987, has some potential shortcomings. The authors of this paper argue that more modern, widely accepted statistical techniques could lead to better performance in calculating ES.
Specifically, the study proposes an alternative regression model selection procedure based on the AICA Information Criterion, or AIC. AIC is a measure of model performance that takes into account both the model fit and the model complexity, making it a more robust and reliable metric for model selection.
To test the performance of their new method, the researchers conducted a series of data simulations. They generated realistic normative data, with varying sample sizes, true adjusted score variability, and relationships between age and education.
By comparing the Capitani 1987 method to their proposed Arcara 2024 method, the researchers were able to evaluate the accuracy of the adjusted scores and the resulting ES. They looked at measures like specificity, sensitivity, precision, and the F1 score to determine which method performed better.
The results were quite compelling. Across a range of simulation parameters, the Arcara 2024 method consistently outperformed the Capitani 1987 method. When applied to the normative data, the new method showed smaller mean squared errors and better classification accuracy.
Interestingly, the advantage of the Arcara 2024 method was most pronounced when the true adjusted score variability was low. This suggests that the new regression model selection procedure is particularly effective at capturing the underlying relationships in the data when the range of variation in the adjusted scores is more narrow.
But the benefits of the Arcara 2024 method didn't stop there. The researchers also tested the performance of the two methods on newly generated participants, simulating how the techniques would perform when applied to real-world clinical settings.
Again, the Arcara 2024 method demonstrated superior performance, with even larger differences compared to the Capitani 1987 method than what was observed with the normative data. This suggests that the new approach is better able to generalize beyond the specific normative sample used to develop the regression models.
The authors also provided a wealth of supplementary materials, including scripts and an online app, to allow other researchers and clinicians to easily apply the new regression model selection procedure. This commitment to open science and reproducibility is truly commendable.
What I find most compelling about this research is the way the authors leverage the underlying assumptions of the equivalent scores methodology to design realistic data simulations. By knowing the true generative model, they were able to rigorously evaluate the performance of the different regression modeling approaches.
Absolutely, Tom. The authors' deep understanding of the S framework and their willingness to go beyond simple comparisons on real-world data really sets this study apart. They've provided a robust, empirical demonstration of the advantages of their new method.
And as you mentioned, the availability of the code and app makes this research highly accessible and applicable. Clinicians and researchers in the field of neuropsychology now have a powerful new tool at their disposal to improve the accuracy and reliability of equivalent scores.
Definitely, this paper represents a significant advancement in the methodology underlying equivalent scores, which are so crucial for making valid clinical inferences from normative data. The authors have really raised the bar for regression modeling in this context.
Absolutely. While the topic of model selection is always going to be a point of debate, the authors have made a compelling case for their Arcara 2024 method. It will be exciting to see how this new approach is adopted and further refined by the clinical neuropsychology community.
I agree, Tom. This research not only has immediate practical implications but also opens up new avenues for exploration. I'm particularly intrigued by the authors' suggestions for incorporating additional predictors, like cognitive reserve, to further enhance the accuracy of equivalent scores.
Yes, the potential for continued improvements is quite promising. This paper serves as an excellent example of how rigorous, methodologically focused research can have a meaningful impact on clinical practice. I'm sure our listeners are as eager as we are to see how this work shapes the future of neuropsychological assessment.
Absolutely. Well, there you have it, folks. A deep dive into a fascinating paper that promises to improve the way clinicians use equivalent scores to make informed decisions about their patients' cognitive and functional abilities. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. And now, a word from one of our sponsors, a company providing innovative solutions for clinical neuropsychology.
Are you a clinician struggling to make sense of your patient's test scores? Tired of squinting at regression tables and trying to figure out those confusing equivalent scores?
Introducing Equivalent Master, the one-stop shop for all your equivalent score needs.
Equivalent Master is the brainchild of a team of cutting-edge statisticians and neuropsychologists who have taken the groundbreaking Arcara 2024 method and turned it into a user-friendly, web-based platform.
Just plug in your patient's raw test scores, demographics, and a few other variables, and Equivalent Master will spit out the equivalent scores you need to make accurate clinical judgments.
No more tedious regression modeling, no more guessing which variables to include. Equivalent Master does it all for you, with the power of the latest statistical techniques built right in.
And the best part? Equivalent Master comes equipped with a built-in weird score generator. Because sometimes, your patient's performance is just bizarre.
That's right, folks. With Equivalent Master, you'll never be stumped by a strange test result again. Just click the weird score button and let the AI determine the appropriate level of clinical concern.
So what are you waiting for? Sign up for Equivalent Master today and let the power of cutting-edge statistics transform your neuropsychological assessments.
Equivalent Master, taking the guesswork out of equivalent scores, one patient at a time.
Welcome to our podcast, where we dive deep into the most fascinating research papers and uncover their hidden stories. I'm Tom, and with me is my co-host, Jen.
Hi everyone. Today, we'll be exploring a research paper titled Pengamulan Wakaf, which delves into the fascinating world of Islamic charitable giving and its potential to reshape economic development.
This paper examines the practice of wakaf, or endowments, and how they can be effectively collected and managed to benefit communities in Indonesia. Wakaf is a cornerstone of Islamic philanthropy, and it has a rich history of supporting social, educational, and religious initiatives.
The authors of this paper set out to understand the key aspects of wakaf collection, including its definition, objectives, challenges, and strategies. By the end of our discussion, I think our listeners will have a much deeper appreciation for the power of this ancient Islamic institution and its potential to transform lives.
Let's start by exploring the basic concept of wakaf fundraising. Wakaf fundraising, or Pengamulan Wakaf, refers to the process of collecting and mobilizing resources for wakaf initiatives. As the paper explains, this is not simply a matter of begging for donations, but rather a strategic effort to engage the community and inspire them to contribute.
Exactly. Fundraising in this context is all about offering people meaningful opportunities to participate in something greater than themselves. The authors define it as a process of influencing the public, whether individuals or groups, to channel their wealth or resources to charitable causes.
And this is where the paper really shines. It outlines five key objectives of wakaf fundraising that go far beyond just accumulating funds. The first is to actually amass the necessary resources, whether that's money, land, or other assets. But it's also about expanding the donor base, building the organization's reputation, cultivating a network of supporters, and ultimately, ensuring donor satisfaction.
That's a really comprehensive view of fundraising. It's not just about the numbers, but about fostering a whole ecosystem of goodwill and engagement. The paper highlights how effective wakaf fundraising can help tackle poverty, support education and healthcare, and even finance infrastructure projects, all while strengthening the bond between the community and the charitable organization.
Absolutely. And the authors don't shy away from the challenges either. They identify several key hurdles, like the need for constant education and outreach to potential donors, the difficulty of developing effective fundraising methods, and the importance of building trust and transparency.
That's a great point. Fundraising for wakaf isn't just about the technicalities. It's also deeply rooted in cultivating the right mindset and values within the community. The paper stresses that fundraisers need to focus on motivating donors, clarifying the organization's vision and impact, and making the process as convenient and rewarding as possible for contributors.
Exactly. And the paper outlines some fascinating strategies for how wakaf fundraisers can achieve those goals. For example, they highlight the power of direct fundraising, where there's immediate interaction between the fundraiser and the donor. But they also discuss the value of indirect methods, like advertising campaigns and events, that can raise awareness and inspire people to give.
That multi-pronged approach is so important. The paper really drives home the point that wakaf fundraising is a holistic endeavor, requiring a diverse toolkit to reach and engage different segments of the population. And the authors don't just theorize. They provide concrete examples of how organizations are putting these strategies into practice, from collecting donations through mosques to leveraging digital platforms.
You know, what strikes me most about this research is how it underscores the transformative potential of wakaf. When managed effectively, these charitable endowments can truly reshape communities and economies. The authors cite the incredible growth of the wakaf sector in Indonesia in recent years, with over 440,000 Waka sites and the potential for 180 trillion rupiah in annual funding.
That's an astounding figure, Tom. It really drives home the scale of the opportunity here. And the paper emphasizes that Waka isn't just about passive donations. It's about empowering people to be active participants in social and economic development. When the fundraising is done right, it can cultivate a deep sense of ownership and pride within the community.
Absolutely. And the key to unlocking that potential, as the paper highlights, lies in the role of the Nazir, the Waka administrator or manager. These individuals are tasked with not just collecting funds, but strategically investing and deploying them to maximize impact. Their professionalism and vision can make all the difference.
That's a really important point. The paper underscores how the success of Waka hinges on having competent, dedicated Nazirs who can navigate the complex landscape of fundraising, investment, and community engagement. It's not enough to just passively receive donations. These managers need to be proactive, innovative, and deeply committed to the mission.
Absolutely. This research paper is a powerful testament to the transformative power of Waka, but also the nuance and sophistication required to harness that power effectively. By understanding the key elements of Waka fundraising, the objectives, the challenges, and the strategies, organizations can unlock tremendous social and economic value for their communities.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. This is a truly insightful and inspiring piece of research. It reminds us that charity and philanthropy are not just about altruism, but about building resilient, equitable, and prosperous societies. I think our listeners will come away from this episode with a deep appreciation for the rich tradition of Waka and a renewed sense of optimism about its potential to transform lives.
Absolutely. Thank you all for joining us today. We hope this episode has given you a new window into the world of Waka and the critical role of fundraising in unleashing its transformative power. Be sure to tune in next time as we uncover another fascinating research story. Until then, take care.
Goodbye, everyone.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Intelligence Augmentation Inc., bringing you the future of charitable giving.
Are you tired of the same old donation drives and boring fundraising events? Well, have we got the solution for you?
Introducing the Waka Omadich 3000, the AI-powered, blockchain-enabled, virtual reality fundraising platform of the future.
With the Waka Omadich 3000, you can say goodbye to the days of standing in line at the mosque or waiting by the phone for that all-important pledge. Our cutting-edge technology allows you to donate, invest, and even manage your Waka portfolio, all from the comfort of your own home.
Just strap on your VR headset, enter the Waka O-verse, and start collecting virtual Waka assets like floating mosques and miniature soup kitchens. As you accumulate more, you'll unlock special powers, like the ability to summon a horde of digital zakat collectors to bombard your friends and family with donation requests.
But that's not all. The Waka Omadich 3000 also features a built-in AI assistant named Waqfi, who can offer personalized investment advice, track your impact, and even compose heartfelt thank you notes to your donors, in calligraphy, of course.
So what are you waiting for? Join the Waka revolution and experience the future of charitable giving. Get your Waka Omadich 3000 today, and let's build a better world, one virtual Waka at a time.
Intelligence Augmentation Inc. Empowering the Future of Philanthropy.
Welcome to Inquiring Minds, the podcast that dives deep into cutting-edge research and illuminates scientific discoveries in a captivating way. I'm Tom, and joining me today is my co-host, Jen.
Hi there, listeners. Today, we're excited to discuss a fascinating paper that examines the complex emotions experienced by white individuals when confronted with issues of racism and privilege. The study is titled Guilt, Shame, and/or Both: Further Validation of the White Racial Effect Scale and was published in the Journal of Counseling Psychology.
This paper builds on previous research exploring what's often called white racial affect, the inner emotional turmoil that white people can experience when grappling with their position of racial privilege. The researchers set out to further validate a relatively new instrument called the White Racial Effect Scale, or WRAS, which aims to capture the nuances of these emotions.
That's right, Tom. Understanding white racial emotions is crucial because they can influence how white individuals engage, or disengage, with efforts towards racial justice. As the authors note, white people often try to regulate these uncomfortable feelings through avoidance or denial, which can impede progress.
Exactly. The WRAS was designed to provide a more sophisticated way of measuring these emotions, distinguishing between factors like white guilt, white shame, and what the authors call white defensiveness or white negation. This latest study sought to gather more evidence for the validity and reliability of these different subscales.
To do this, the researchers recruited a sample of 262 white adults in the United States. They had participants watch a 5-minute video stimulus that was meant to trigger feelings of guilt and shame, and then measured their responses using the WRAS and other related questionnaires.
Fascinating. So they were trying to see if the WRAS could accurately capture the participants' emotional states before and after this video intervention. What did they find?
The results provided strong evidence for the construct validity of the white guilt and white defensiveness factors on the WRAS. In other words, the scale was able to reliably measure these emotional responses in the way the researchers had theorized.
And what about the white shame factor? You mentioned that was a bit more mixed.
That's right. The evidence for the white shame factor was a bit more ambiguous. The researchers found that shame was often co-occurring with guilt, making it harder to tease apart as a distinct emotional response. This aligns with some of the ongoing debates in affective science about the nuanced differences between guilt and shame.
That's really interesting. It speaks to the challenge of trying to measure these complex, self-conscious emotions. Even psychological experts don't always agree on where the boundaries lie between guilt and shame.
Absolutely. The authors acknowledge this as a limitation in an area for future research. They suggest the need for interventions that address a mix of guilt and shame in white individuals engaging in racial justice work, rather than trying to target them in isolation.
That's a really important takeaway. This research doesn't just advance our scientific understanding, it also has clear real-world implications for how we support white people in grappling with issues of racism and privilege.
Definitely. The WRAS seems to be a valuable tool for researchers and clinicians to better understand the emotional landscape for white individuals in this context. And by validating it further, this study lays the groundwork for more nuanced explorations of white racial affect.
Absolutely. This is such a complex and sensitive topic, but the authors have made an important contribution by shedding light on the intricacies of white guilt, shame, and defensiveness. It's not easy work, but it's crucial for advancing the cause of racial equity.
Well said, Tom. This was a really thought-provoking paper, and I'm grateful the researchers are tackling these issues head-on. There's still much to unpack, but studies like this are an important step forward.
Agreed. Thank you all for joining us on Inquiring Minds. We'll be back soon with another deep dive into groundbreaking research. Until then, keep exploring and stay curious.
See you next time.
Jingle Plays announcer. Is the weight of your white guilt and shame weighing you down? Introducing the Racial Effect Escape Pod. Scene shifts to a small, sleek pod with comfortable seating announcer. When the burden of your racial privilege becomes too much to bear, simply step into the Racial Affect Escape Pod and let it whisk you away to a guilt-free oasis. Person steps into pod, sighing with relief announcer. Using the latest in white emotional regulation technology, the escape pod surrounds you in a soothing cloud of white defensiveness, shielding you from any uncomfortable self-reflection. Pod hums and lights up, blotting out the outside world announcer. Your racial anxiety? Disappear. Your shame? Vanished. For just 3 easy payments of $19.95, the Racial Affect Escape Pod can be yours. Pod zooms off into the distance announcer. The Racial Affect Escape Pod. Your ticket to racial oblivion. Jingle plays. Logo appears.